Again, we're discussing Shabbos, and I want to begin with another story. Rav Nachum Nerio was doing shlichut in South America, and a Jew came to him and asked him, a young man, how is he supposed to describe Shabbos to his friends and family? Like they want to know what Shabbos is. So he said to them, tell them like this. Now, if you understand South America, you understand that people are warm, they're family-oriented, they're community-oriented. He said, explain to them that on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, you go through the marketplace. When you and your wife go shopping, you're looking for the best meat, the best dishes. You're already starting to prepare for this wonderful meals. You're going to have a series of family events over the weekend. And so you start preparing, and by Wednesday, your house is already starting to smell, and things are starting to defrost as you take out the chickens. And Thursday already, the kids know the smells of the chulent that's starting to cook, or the gefilte fish. And by Friday, there are so many dishes and kugels and chulent, and this is all in preparation. You get good wine, you get good grape juice. And after you've been preparing for this, everyone takes a shower. People come in and they wear the nicest clothing. And you're building up towards this amazing day of family time. And finally, everyone puts on their shine shoes and puts on their nice clothing. And you come out of your house like princes going to the synagogue where you're going to meet your friends who you haven't seen all week. And you're going to sit there and hear an inspiring lecture. And you're going to sing with everyone the Kabbalat Shabbat. And after you finish that, you have a few minutes of quiet meditation with your Creator. Shmona Esrei, the whole community stands in silence. And when you finish that, so then everyone mulls around and talks, and as they walk slowly, leisurely, you have this beautiful walk back home with your family. After you've had tremendous quality community time in shul, you walk back with your family slowly, you have this beautiful walk home, you come into the house, and there are beautiful candles lit. You have a special bread, you don't eat the regular bread you eat all week. You have a special bread. You don't even have it on the plate. You have a special bread on a special platter with a nice cloth cover and a special knife you're going to cut it with, a special goblet for your grape juice or wine, whatever your family likes. You sit down, and before you start the meal, everyone gathers around the table and you start singing a song. And everyone knows the song. You don't even have to open a book. We start singing the Shalom Aleichem. And then we sing a song which speaks on two levels, the spiritual level of the connection we're about to have with our Creator, and the simple level, the song of appreciation to the wife for everything she's done. And the whole family gets together and sings this song. And this is all before you started eating. Now everyone's again in their finest attire. You've prepared for this day all week, and you finally get, everyone gathers around the table. And after the song, you as the head of the family lead a beautiful song that everyone knows the tunes and knows the words, a song describing the beauty of this day, this gift that you were given, what we call Kiddush. You speak about what a wonderful day we're about to begin. Now, again, you've come from the community. You're going to share that wine with everyone around the table. And then we have a special ritual, the way we wash our hands and sit down, and you make the blessing and give out that special bread to everyone around the table. Some people even leave that bread on the plata, on the hot plate, from an hour before the meal, so that they get special warm, luscious bread. And then you give out the bread, and you sit to the table, you have special ritual foods. It can be the gefilte fish, it can be the soup, the chicken soup that people remember their whole lives, their mother's chicken soup. It can be just the regular challah with salt, and you have a first course, you have a second course, you sing special songs that the family knows, and suddenly you have family time singing songs, and children share what's happened to them during the week. You speak to your wife. We have special places at the table. You sit at the head, your wife sits at the other head. You have Shabbos candles, and this whole meal is taking place with the family. Children sit on your lap as you sing songs. Children are running around the table, and towards the end of the meal, again, we have ritual songs which lead us to the concluding song, the concluding blessing at the end of the meal. Then you slowly clear the table, wash the dishes, put the kids to bed, and then you have a special time with your wife. We have a special mitzvah on Friday night to spend time with our wives, to have intimacy with our wives. We know that throughout the week, we know that night is a special time for us. The next morning, you get up late. And we traditionally make our synagogue services late. You come to shul later on Shabbos. And again, you're going to meet up with all those friends you haven't seen all week. You're going to pray with them. You're going to sing with them. You're going to be inspired with them. You're going to hear a speech about a portion of the Bible, which you haven't had necessarily too much time to study this week. And finally, at the end of all that, we again gather as a community after prayer, after singing. We unite as a community. People talk to one another as they slowly walk home. Again, we're in our best clothing. Everyone's having a day of leisure, of calm. As we slowly come home, we again have special foods for the day meal. Some will have chamin, some will have chulin, some will have special hot sauce. Different cultures have different things, but it's special food. And the kids anticipate it, and the whole family all week is anticipating this one day where we can all unite. And you finish the meal, traditionally, everyone gets a good nap. You finish the nap, you're not done yet. Now you go back to meet the whole community a third time in the afternoon. You come back for mincha. It's a short prayer, but you get to walk up together. You get to walk up with your kids. You get to walk up and talk to people on your way up. You get to walk back down. You get the meeting. Sometimes you have a short class after prayer. You come back and you're not done yet. You have another meal. You're not really hungry. This third meal is just, we're going to get together again. We're going to sit down as a family again. You're not hungry by that point. You've had such good food at night. In the morning, you're having heartburn already. But yeah, you're getting back together with the family again. And when you're done with that, you rejoin the community one last time to say a short prayer in the evening when you're done. And then you go back home and you have a little meal. You're not hungry. You have a little malava malka. You light two candles. You sit down with your wife. That's Shabbos. So, firstly, I think the description is brilliant. Meaning, we often miss the amazing aspects of... we often miss the beautiful blessings we have of Shabbos. And I'm tempted to pause here, just so we absorb what we're getting on the Shabbos and we miss it. But I have to stick in something because I think everyone here is either frustrated or going to be frustrated. So I want to tell you another story. Okay? Rav Aryeh Levin has a grandson called Rav Benny Levin. And he's a phenomenal speaker and he's a phenomenal human being. And I think that we should maybe get together at some point in the next 2 months and try to bring him to give us a tour of Jerusalem. We should get together as a group and go out there and hear him. I tried to set this up once, but he's heavily booked and there's a heavy price. So it's very worthwhile because he'll take you through Jerusalem and talk to you about what Jerusalem was with his grandfather, Rav Aryeh Levin. But I think it's on 613.org that he has a lecture that's very worth hearing. You could search and find the lecture. I think it's on 613.org, but I might be mistaken. Do a search, Rav Benny Levin, and if you don't find it, email me. I should have it somewhere. Yeah, it's the number, 613.org. So he describes how, as a teenager, he came from the United States to Israel. His grandfather, Rav Aryeh Levin, was widowed, and he was going to live with his grandfather, Rav Aryeh Levin. And his grandfather would eat by his daughter, the Friday night meal. So he had heard that his grandfather is this big tzaddik and Talmud Chacham, and he was waiting to see his grandfather's Shabbos table. And comes Friday night, and he goes up with his grandfather to his aunt's house, and they sit down for the meal, and his grandfather's about to make Kiddush, and one kid hits the other kid. And that kid starts yelling, and one pulls the other one's hair, and they knock down some drink on the table. And now we're talking your Shabbos, right? So, Aryeh, could we serve them first? Yeah.
Is it ready, you think, already?
Yeah.
He said
at least
until
10:30, so I have an idea. So going back to Rav Benny Lau's experience with his grandfather, the whole Shabbos table, he's seeing, the parents are trying to keep the kids from killing one another, and they can barely get in the Dvar Torah edgewise. And before he knows it, the meal's over, and his grandfather's walking back down to his house, apartment, whatever it was. And they're going to sleep, and he's not so happy. This isn't the holy spiritual Shabbos meal he thought he'd have with Rav Aryeh Levin. And at one point, Rav Aryeh Levin realized how he was feeling, and Rav Aryeh didn't want to say anything bad about his daughter-in-law. He basically said to him, This is holiness. This is spiritual. This is an amazing thing when a family has a Shabbos meal. And this is what a normal Shabbos table is supposed to look like. Kids are supposed to be normal. I want to add a point. There's a difference in ages. There's a difference between a Shabbos table when the kids are 4, 5, 6, 7, and a Shabbos table where you already have 11, 12-year-olds and up. And there's a different potential. You should have different expectations. Yeah, kids will fight, and kids will get on one another's nerves. But you can sing more songs with them. And here, let's digress for 1 second. Some people don't like Shabbos meals, but sing them anyways. Some people don't feel like they're too musical, but you have to have Shabbos meals at your table. Teach your kids. I have over 100 songs on my website where I teach how to sing Jewish songs. It's a part of the Shabbos table. And as you force yourself to do it, if you don't want to do it, and you force yourself to learn it, with time it will become natural to you, and you owe it to your kids. It's a part of the table. It's a part of the atmosphere. So very often a person says, I don't know how to do the Eishes Chayil. I make a lot of mistakes as I say Eishes Chayil. So download one song, download the Eishes Chayil from my website, and have it playing all week long. After about 3 months, you'll know it. You'll ask me, why 3 months? I'll say, because it takes time. Don't expect to know it in 2 weeks. You know, I remember about 2 months ago, 3 months ago, there's a war going on in the south, and we decided here we're going to add a chapter, two chapters of Tehillim for the soldiers and the people in the south. And this is a song that I heard in shul for I don't know how many years, and I couldn't get it. And then I downloaded it, and I had it playing again and again and again, and I still couldn't get it. And it was a shocker to me how hard it was for me to learn a song which I didn't grow up with. I heard it only after I was married, pretty much. And I'm still not getting it. I'm still not doing it 100% right. I had it playing all week in my house now during Bein Hazmanim, and I'm still not getting it right. Yeah, the Motzei Shabbos tune. So I'm supposed to be leading it, I know. And I think I do the best job here. That's not saying much. Right? Okay, so I'm just saying, you have to force yourself, and over time you'll get there. I get a lot of feedback from guys who have it playing in their dorm room all week long. A woman called me up and she said, you should know you're singing in our house all year. All year. That's what my husband listens to. And we had neighbors across the hall who were Chozrim B'Tshuva, and same thing. They just made a disc of the songs, and after a year, they knew it. And we'd walk in, and they were singing our songs, right? But most of it's classical. You know, here and there, they'd be making my mistakes. Okay, it's important. It's important. It's important to invest the time to learn the tunes, to learn the words, and be patient with yourselves. It takes time, but it's important. And you start with one song every Shabbos. You start with one, and then you go on to two. And go traditional. I know you can sing Dirori Kra to the tune of It's a Small World or the Beach Boys. I know. And it might be cool. But you got to give your kids a Shabbos atmosphere. And somehow It's a Small World just doesn't do it. Neither do the Beach Boys. I could sing Dirori Kra. You guys know which song of the Beach Boys that is?
I'll do it again. This is the worst trip I've ever been on.
Okay. So, but that's not a chokhmah. Take traditional tunes for the Rory Kran, for all the songs, give your kids the traditional atmosphere. Fine. Hey, it's a good starting point, but you gotta try any traditional one. What's a traditional one? Okay. Is that one? It's important. Learn the Kiddush. Learn the Eishes Chayil. You got to be able to sing it. So you don't know it yet. Give yourself time, but learn it. You know, you got to move forward in life. and demand that your kids join in. We have a rule in my house. When I sing Eish Yischael and Shalom Aleichem, you could sing with me or be quiet. You can't talk. Meaning, you don't want to sing with me, but you can't have another conversation going. This isn't my song. This is our song. And again, when a kid's 4, don't demand it of him, okay? But when a kid hits 6, 7, you should tell him. That was your question, right?
Yeah, well, like, where's the age when you start demanding?
When a kid turns 6 or 7, you tell him, look, I want you to sing with me.
Does that mean demanding presence at the table?
I think that kids should be in the table vicinity for Eish Yischael and Shalom Aleichem. They shouldn't be in their room or playing a different game.
In the living room.
In the living room, right. So if they're reading, I usually tell them, you know, why don't you put the book away? We're all singing Eish Yischael.
And it's a good book.
I agree. I know it's a good book. And I say, you know, that's good, but you're going to eat a delicious meal. Your mother went to the store and bought the food. Your mother brought it home and cooked it. Your mother put the stuff in the fridge, peeled it, heated it up. You're going to sing in Eish Yischael the way you should. Now, I try to take advantage of the walk home, and very often on the walk home from shul, I'll try to point out to the kids how much their mother has done this week to build an appreciation within them. Like I'll ask them jokingly, did you pick up the chicken? Are we going to have chicken tonight? Did you pick up the chicken? Mm-hmm. And the kids will look at me and say, come on, you know I didn't pick up the chicken. Really? So how are we going to have chicken tonight? Yeah, then they'll go, great, we won't, right?
Straight
to dessert, and I'll say, okay, who made dessert here? Ah, bah. No, wait a second. No, okay, so each week it's a different gimmick, but I will very often spend the walk home, or part of it, I'll tell them a story, and part of the walk home we'll talk about how their week was like, but I'll also try to get them to appreciate what their mother has done for the Shabbos. And then... on the Eish Yischael, I tell them, you know, where's your Hakaras HaTov? Of course you're going to sing with me. And again, if they don't sing, I don't fight that. But they can't have another conversation. That's not fair, because then what ends up happening is they're going to drown you out. They're the majority. You're one. It's important to try and get them accustomed. I don't hear you. I want everyone singing Eish Yischael. It's important to have everyone sing Shalom Aleichem. And the Zmiros, so I try to let them lead. Like I'll tell them, you choose. So my kids already know which are the shortest ones. But I tell them, you know, you want to develop this part of your soul. It's a part of who you are. You want to know to sing. A person who can't sing is lacking a certain expression of his soul. You're a less happy person if you're not singing. Singing affects you. It affects everyone around you. You have to open up your soul to the ability to sing in front of other people. Kids come into shul and they're self-conscious. I can't sing in front of other people. Why? So I always tell them I have the same problem. You know how much I shake before I lain? You know, I leaned here Parshas Naso. What was that, 2 months ago? I went over it over 100 times, literally. And I still wasn't sure I wouldn't blank when I got up there. I have stage fright. Sure, amen. With you guys, I'm comfortable, but if I had to talk in front of the whole crowd here, every time I get up there to talk, I have stage fright. So, okay, but singing, you shouldn't have stage fright from singing in front of everyone. You're part of a shul, and yet very often kids won't sing with everyone. So the starting point is at home. And again, not at age 4. But at age 4, you could hold him on your lap as you're singing, and he'll get used to it. And you could, there's a guy who's a tremendous Baal Kore today. And I remember when he came to Machon Meir, and I said to him once, you know, you have a beautiful voice, you could be a good Baal Kore. And thanks to that comment, he said, really? And that got him going. Today's a Baal Kore. You tell your kid you have a beautiful voice, it's great to hear you sing, you give him that positive feedback. You don't have to say it every Shabbos, but enough you say it once, twice, you throw that line, and he'll grab at it, and then he'll keep singing. And some kids take it once, some kids take it less, but it's important they should sing. I recommend to get your girls singing too. It's important for their soul also. A girl should know to sing the Shabbos Mirrors too. Okay, there are guests there, you'll decide whether they can sing in front of the guests or not. Now, my custom is they can, but I'm not telling anyone what to do. But Lamaise, so singing at the Shabbos table is important. And getting them involved with the singing is important. You put the kids on your lap, and then you bounce them up and down as they sing. And they know that's a part of the game, so that's also important. That's fun. That's important for them. So coming back to what our Shabbos table is going to look like. So if we want our Shabbos table to have an atmosphere, there are a few keys that will get us there. And what atmosphere are we looking for? I want to first address one of the questions. Someone asked, it's a day of Gashmias. I'm looking forward to the nap and the meal. So I want to tell you a story. I was in Mir in Brooklyn, and I used to daven at the Neitz Minyan there with the Chalabi, And one day a guy shows up to Shul, and I see everyone respect him. Like, they give him a lot of honor. And every so often he talks, and every time he talks, I see he doesn't know what he's talking about. But he dresses the part. He's got a Hamburg, he's got a long frock, and he walks like an old rabbi, and he's got a long white beard. And I could see this guy really is a charlatan, you know, but no one else caught on. So, okay. So comes one Shabbos, and we're filing out of shul, and he was standing there, you know, collecting money as giving himself off as whatever. But they all knew him, and I wasn't Shabbos? Like, no. So one Shabbos, he was also davening there. And it's Shabbos morning, and I'd always try to shuffle by because people would shake his hand and kiss his hand. I didn't want to shake it, and I didn't want to kiss it. So I'd always try to shuffle by like another way out the shul, whatever, fine. One Shabbos, as I'm trying to get my way out, he saw me, and he sticks his hand out. So, okay, I'm cornered, fine. I shake his hand. I'm not going to kiss him, but, you know, someone extends their hand. Do you shake it? Fine. I shake his hand, and he doesn't let go. And the Chalabim, even in America, they say Shabbat Shalom. So he tells me Shabbat Shalom. I say Shabbat Shalom. And he's holding my hand, and he says, why did you just tell me Shabbat Shalom? So I said, because I want you to have Shabbat Shalom. So he says, no. And then he tells me a Dvar Torah, which I bought. He says to me, Shabbat is the only time when you can have real Shalom. Because all week long, you're at odds with yourself. Gashmius contradicts Ruchnius. If I want to be Ruchni, so I don't spend my time looking at the physical world. But comes Shabbos, Shabbos is when there's peace. Because the Gashmius is Ruchnius. You have a mitzvah to enjoy Shabbos. So that's why we say Shabbat Shalom. Because Shabbos is a time when you can really attain peace because you shouldn't be at odds with yourself. So I bought it. The guy was a charlatan and other things. But when it came to that Dvar Torah, I said, hey, he's onto something. I don't know who he's quoting. I don't know where he got it from. But it's a... So going back to his Dvar Torah... I think it's important that we don't feel guilty that we're looking forward to that nap and that chilling, and that's great. But I'm going to tell you something, which I want to expand for a second and then refocus at the Shabbos. You guys are all married here, right? So I could tell you something. Then I have to label this class as for children only. Okay, so we're going to make it part two and part three. Okay, no, for adults only. Okay.